This is Matt Connickson. I'm the sales agronomist of CHX Ag Services in Oakley, Minnesota. We're pleased to bring you this update from the Red River Farm Network, CHX Ag Services, providing solutions for your success.
Monday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Tyler Donaldson along with Randy Conan. There are 8 days left on the calendar for the Minnesota legislature. The omnibus agriculture bill will be heard in both the House and Senate today. Ahead of the conference committee process, Senate Agriculture Committee Chairman Eric Putnam has been meeting with House Agriculture Committee Chair Samantha Vang.
One of the things that is in the Senate bill but not in the House is we're taking avian influenza seriously. So we've got a pretty big chunk of money we want to sink into letting poultry farmers buy lasers to protect their turkeys. And one thing I just like saying, turkey lasers. But it's also going to do, I think, some real good. So we got a matching program that we're going to put out to help people buy these infrared lasers to keep waterfowl away from their turkeys and their chickens.
Both bills consider the groundwater problems in southeastern Minnesota. The House version allows the Agricultural Fertilizer Research and Education Council to sunset and divert the funds for the groundwater issue. Putnam said the Senate bill renews AFREC for 10 years and makes no changes to the program.
Part of that is because it's already doing a lot of the work that some activists want it to do. But the other thing that's important to me deeply is the process. I mean, we got people working together to figure out how to solve problems. People don't talk about that enough with AFREC, that it's farmers, talking to researchers, sorting what they want to do together. And to me, that's almost as important as where the funds go. So that's one of the bigger issues that we're likely to disagree on. But, you know, the governor is 100% behind the Senate position, as are a bunch of folks in the House.
The new guidelines for sustainable aviation fuel tax credits specify certain farming practices. Minnesota Congressman Brad Finstead does not like the direction taken with the new guidelines.
The devil's in the details, and the devil is all over the place in those details. I mean, in order for corn crop to be used for sustainable aviation fuel, it's going to have to come from a farmer that does no-till. Cover crops. I mean, you're going to impose practices on farmers that environmentally actually go backwards in some areas. What works on my farm doesn't work on a farm 20 miles away from me, let alone 200 or 2,000 miles away from me. So this heavy-handed, top-down approach of we're going to have all of these environmental answers, It doesn't make sense.
As a farmer, Finstead can deliver sub-inch accuracy when applying fertilizer.
I'm not going to waste a penny putting fertilizer on that ground where it's not going to return on investment. I'm not going to just throw seeds willy-nilly in my farm. I'm going to do it based on my soil type and use my precision equipment to apply at the rate and the speed that I want to do it at. We have all of that information, and that can lead us to some good environmental outcomes. But to do, you know, to say, no, it's got to be cover crop, you got to have a cover crop, you got to do no-till, you got to do this, you got to do that, and then we'll maybe get you qualified for this tax break. We're going to exclude farmers and exclude corn and soybean farmers from the sustainable aviation fuel market.
Corn and soybean planting is just underway for farmers in Barnes County, North Dakota. Pioneer sales representative Ron Truax says the recent rains have interrupted things, but soil conditions are looking great.
Probably somewhere between 5 and 10% of the corn is in the ground. I would say around like 5% overall across everybody. Maybe like 2% on the soybeans, or just a few guys have started on soybeans. Before the rain, I've got guys tell me it's the best plus conditions they've ever planted into. It's going really, really good. And then, of course, now it's wet. Some of the lighter fields guys are starting on today, getting back into. A little bit done over the weekend on really sandy soils.
Pre-emergence herbicides can really help with weed control, says Truax.
I think guys are just put a pre on the beans if you can. That's a pre-emergence herbicide there. That always works. That's always a big payback if a guy wants to. The guy's able to get that on, that's a good thing to do. It really helps with the weed control later on. So.
According to Golden Harvest Seed sales representative Brian Langland, farmers in south central Minnesota have most of the corn crop planted and about half of the soybeans.
Well, we've gotten a lot of planting done here in the last 9-10 days in between rains. We still got a bunch of planting that needs to happen. We've got anywhere from 2 to 5 inches of rain here, and you know, over the last 4 or 5 days. We've had a nice couple of days now yesterday and today, but looking at maybe getting another shower tonight into tomorrow. So I would say in south central Minnesota, we've got 80% of the corn in the ground, and I would guess anywhere from 40 to 50% of the beans are in the ground, but still a long ways to go. The soil conditions are fantastic, other than, you know, we've been wet here with a bunch of rain in the last week.
And rains in the area have halted planting.
I think right now guys are just anxious to get back at it. You know, with the forecast looking like it does, it looks like we might be sitting here for another 2, 3, 4 days, depending on how much rain we get tonight into Wednesday. It's getting to be crunch time for some of these guys to get the corn in, and a lot of guys like to get that in before the 15th of May. So if we could just get some warm weather and dry weather, we could knock out acres pretty quick with some of this big equipment that we have.
With El Nino gone, meteorologists are now watching for signs of incoming La Nina conditions. Nutrient Ag Solutions Senior Science Fellow Eric Snodgrass cautions that every La Nina is different.
Yeah, so El Nino is done. Even though you'll still look out there and see warm ocean temperatures, they're the last thing to change. The trade winds have strengthened. We have seen cold water emerge right along the equator, and that just signals the normal transition. This is the time of year, if there's an El Nino, that it fades. It fades in spring. We expect there to be La Nina conditions by summer, but remember, every El Nino and La Nina, they all have different flavors, and we're curious what the flavor of this one's going to be. So big picture ideas. Let's just use the models. The weather forecast models want to take drought that's in Mexico, expand it into the southern plains, and press it east out of the plains. I'm talking the whole length of the plains, north to south, meaning that if we have drought risk, it just builds in throughout the season and it'll be here by late summer.
Bipartisan group of 21 senators asking the federal government to step up its delivery of accurate information about the spread of highly pathogenic avian influenza. In a letter to Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack, the lawmakers are asking USDA, the Food and Drug Administration, and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention to provide a coordinated up-to-date approach. This is the Red River Farm Network.
Monday Farm News on the Red River Farm Network. Lowen & Associates market analyst Matt Hines says the livestock market is looking for direction.
Very volatile week last week. You know, we had live cattle that were moving $2, $3, feeders, you know, gains and losses of $3 to $4. Of course, early in the week, we had some bearish news with additional avian flu in more dairies, USDA announcing they were going to test ground beef. And then by the end of the week, there's some positive news. No beef samples tested positive. We had marketing year high for weekly export sales and had higher cash feedlot trade.
AgMarket.net market analyst Jacob Burke says the weather market or weather remains the big driver of the grain markets.
You're at that point too, where is rain hurting or helping? I think in a large part of the areas, you're seeing that that rain has been beneficial, mainly whenever you start talking about in the plains or the, you know, the wheat market in the plains. We saw a case, you know, the Kansas, Oklahoma, Texas Panhandle got a decent shot of rain across the most part. And so, you know, wait on the markets opening up on Sunday night. And then you start coming in here and looking at South America and some of the Rio Grande do Sul that had, you know, more export business.
USDA's weekly export inspections report for the week ending May 2nd shows corn export inspections of 1.28 million metric tons. That compares to 1.29 million metric tons the previous week. It's also 32% more than the same week a year ago. Soybean inspections of 349,000 tons are 26% more than the previous week, but 12% less than a year ago. Wheat inspections totaling 321,000 metric tons are 36% less than the previous week, but 48% more than last year. For the marketing year, corn inspections are 32% ahead of last year's pace. Soybean inspections are down 18%, and wheat inspections are 6% less than last year.
Tyson Foods is reporting fiscal year 2024 second quarter adjusted income of $406 million on sales of $13 billion. For the 3 months ending March 30th, Tyson Foods beef segment reports second quarter sales at $4.95 billion, chicken at $4.06 billion, and pork at $1.48 billion. And for the first 6 months of the fiscal year sales are up 0.7% at $26.4 billion.
Senate Agriculture Committee Chair Debbie Stabenow's farm bill plan includes a doubling of money available to Market Assess Program and Foreign Market Development Program funding. Minnesota Senator Tina Smith said this is a comprehensive bill that includes enhancements to crop insurance and the sugar program.
Debbie has gone directly to our leadership in the Senate and also spoken in a bipartisan way about this and gotten new money into this farm bill, which, as you know, is very unusual. Basically, we're usually solving a math problem with the same amount of money to be able to, you know, make some increases in trade promotion and also make some modest but I think important increases and improvements in some of the commodity programs that Senator Bozeman on the Republican side have been talking so much about. So I think that all is going to be good if we can get it done.
USDA has selected 28 groups to train young people about climate-smart agriculture. USDA's Working Lands Climate Corp is described as a pathway to a career in conservation, climate change, and rural development. The organizations hosting the Climate Corps include the Minnesota Farmers Union Foundation, Ducks Unlimited, Pheasants Forever, and the Nature Conservancy.
A showcase celebrating advancements in modern agriculture is being held in Washington, D.C. this week at the National Mall near USDA headquarters. Participants include the U.S. Wheat Associates, National Association of Wheat Growers, North American Millers Association and American Bakers Association, and will feature exhibits highlighting wheat production's role in evolving diets. Industry leaders will be available to discuss the industry's contribution to food security.
The Potato Leadership Education and Advancement Foundation, LEAF, has announced 18 participants for its inaugural class in the Leadership in the Field program. Bernie Mullen of H&S Fresh Pack at Hoopole, North Dakota, is the participant from this region. LEAF is a leadership immersion program organized by the National Potato Council. Reporting Agriculture's Business, you're listening to the Red River Farm Network.
Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. The North Dakota Beef Commission is celebrating May Beef Month. According to Executive Director Nicole Wardner, the different demographics are being targeted, including children.
Pre-K to sixth grade, we have our Junior Beef Readers Challenge, and that's challenging kids to continue reading as school wraps up, but also to find books that are about beef and cattle and raising cattle so they know where their food comes from. We've had a 500% increase in the participation for the Beef Readers Challenge this year. So we're excited about all those kids across the state of North Dakota that are going to be reading beef books.
Retail promotions are also taking place throughout May Beef Month.
So we've got a partnership with the North Dakota Grocers Association where they're going to be hosting a bunch of different events and grilling samples and those types of things across the state where they're going to highlight the sales that they have and maybe some different cuts that consumers wouldn't possibly think or readily grab but would be willing to try if they've tested the product right there in front of them.
Taking a look at the markets before we leave you on this Monday afternoon. July wheat Minneapolis is up 11 and a quarter cents, 725 and three quarters. September Minneapolis up 11 and a half to 731. July wheat out of Chicago up 24 pennies on the day, 646 and a half. The winter wheat Kansas City July contract up 24 and a quarter, 674 and a half. July corn up 9 and a half to 469 and three quarters. September corn up 8 and a quarter to 477 and a half. December corn up 6 and a quarter to 489. July soybeans 35 cents higher on the day, 12.50. August soybeans 32 cents higher, 12.47 and a half. November soybeans 20 cents higher, 12.21. In Winnipeg, July canola up 12.90 to 6.59.90 Canadian. June live cattle down 15 cents, 176.52. August live cattle down 62 cents, 174 even. October live cattle down 57 cents, 177.47. May feeder cattle down 220 to 241.10. August feeder cattle down $2.40 to 252.35. You are listening to the Red River Farm Network.